Hello and welcome to the Upland Lives podcast. My name is Mike Ryan, author of Nature of Snowdonia and the forthcoming The Mountain Leader, a handbook. Look out for that one, please. It should be out before Christmas. This is my podcast. We've renamed it Outdoor Lives for this series, just to better represent the wider group of people that we're talking to. It's free to air, it's ad-free and it's music-free. You can find out more about me and my workshops and things I do, e-learning modules, for example, at www.mikeryan.co.uk. But the podcast today is not about me, it's about my guest Dom Ferris. And Dom is the director of Trash Free Trails. He's a dedicated mountain biker, slightly frustrated surfer at the moment, living here in North Wales. He spent many years in Cornwall working for Surfers Against Sewage, and he's moved back to his homeland because he is from Wales, he was born in Wales, and he's concentrating on trash-free trails now and building up some scientific background moving towards trash-free trails. So, Dom, how are you today?
I'm okay, thanks, Mike. Yeah, I'm recovered nicely after a bout of COVID, which is not very nice, is it?
It's still around, isn't it? We actually started doing this podcast in COVID for something to do. So we're carrying on and COVID is still with us. Dom, I want to talk a little bit about you and how you come to doing what you're doing. But I think for our listeners, it's probably just best if we outline what Trash Free Trails is first as an organisation. I mean, I would certainly ask, why has it got an American name? Is it an American thing that you've copied or brought over? What is Trash Free Trails, Dom?
Where do I start? Start with the name. The few reasons. One, I didn't want to speak. I didn't want to use terms that have got a lot of negative connotations attached, such as rubbish and particularly litter. We could go down a rabbit hole with that, which we might do later on. Secondly, I like wordplay and I like positive wordplay. So I could have gone like Riders Against Rubbish, for example, or Surfers Against Sewage. Is a great example of that. I wanted to be what we're for or what we're trying to achieve. So those combinations, also being a bit of an American file, I lived and worked over there a lot as well in my early 20s. Came to trash-free trails. So the reason behind that is that firstly, it's the obvious stuff. You know, we're trying to eliminate trash out on recreational trails, the places we love to play. But it also gives us a bit of an opportunity to widen our remit at times to the metaphorical space. So creating trash-free spaces for people to connect with nature and to connect with each other. A few reasons behind it, but mostly because I like the sound of it.
Yeah, so there's quite a lot to unpack there, isn't there? Trash-free trails. So my immediate thought is mountain biking routes and somewhere like Llandegla. I would see quite a lot of trash there. But you're talking about a wider connection with nature there.
Yeah. So then the kind of elevator introduction of trash-free trails is that the first part is that we are for everyone. You know, for riders, runners, and roamers alike, everyone's welcome. Mm-hmm. You know, it's anyone who uses any kind of trail. Mm-hmm. And if you think about that, that could be the Cribgoch trail to top of Snowdon, or it could be that little beautiful slither of track through an urban woodland that just, when you're out on your run, it just gives you that little moment of flow. Those are the places we're trying to protect and the people who use them. We took inspiration from Patagonia when it comes to kind of our raison d'etre, and that is we exist to protect our trails and the wild places they take us to. Again, that's a nod towards the literal and the metaphorical, you know, so the things that these spaces do for us. When it comes to kind of a specific mission, you know, which obviously has some objectives or aims and objectives dropping off, is that we've recently flipped this mission, actually. Our mission is to reconnect people with nature through what we call purposeful adventure. And again, we can go into what we define purposeful adventure as later on. And it's a big and create a sustained reduction in the amount of single-use pollution. There's a brackets here, brackets formerly known as litter, to a sustained reduction in single-use pollution on recreational trails by 2030. So we're kind of holding ourselves to account with that 2030 target there as well. And then it drops down into how do we do that, which, you know, maybe it's time for a pause in the conversation before I go into the how.
Yeah, it is. And because again, every time you speak, you give me more questions. So let's just rewind, Dom, and find out who you are,
yeah,
why you're here, why you're doing this. So let me start at the beginning. Just how did you get into the outdoors? How did you discover mountain biking, surfing?
Yeah, it's for me, it's really natural, and I think that's sometimes something that you know, when we talk about inclusion and people finding a way into the outdoors, I think they sometimes, or even I think you could say the same for environmentalism, and I'm saying that with inverted commas, is that people think that you've got this like super higher calling thing, that you've always compelled to, you wrote about it, you're writing poems and things. And no, I was a right monkey when I was a kid, but but like we moved from Birmingham, so I wasn't actually born in Wales. We moved from Birmingham when I was three, to a small holding, because my mum especially was really into the good life.
Great. Yeah.
And we tried the good life, and just my mum, who still to this day is one of my greatest inspirations for being in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. She's just naturally about the outdoors.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like telling me or anything really. It was just doing.
Yeah.
And I still realize now more and more as I get older, I've always just taken my kind of lead from my mum, you know. Yeah. And now she's a really great example. As we go to the beach, and she's her favorite hobby by a million miles is beach combing. So yeah. She, to use my stepdad's term, if just look for the arse up in the air, and you can see my mum. But the problem is, when we're out together, she's doing that with shells and glass, and I'm doing it with plastic pollution. And I'm actually trying to find patterns in the plastic pollution. So it came from that. It came from moving to this place, and it came from a very, very early realization that I absolutely love just roaming around in the woods, and making tracks, climbing trees, running as fast as I could down the middle of pine forest. Like, what a feeling that is. Yeah, so I don't know.
But presumably there was a time where you were mountain biking, surfing, running,
yeah,
out in the countryside, before you really got into this trash-free trails, before you got into the idea of rubbish, you were just out there for the adventure, the excitement, the journey.
Yeah, again, also, like, not really, apparently I was very odd as a kid. My mum, 7 years old, has memories of me getting into, like, a argument with my friends about litter for some weird reason, and it's not that I'm really right on about many things. It's just for some reason that symbolized something for me. And then when I started work as an outdoor instructor in a center in Mid Wales, I immediately understood this responsibility for the place, because it's a resource, and without that resource I wouldn't have had a job. I wouldn't have a job now. You wouldn't have a job, Mike. That's a resource. And the mountain equipment jacket that you're wearing, we sell our livelihoods on this place. Yet there's no conversation, there's barely any conversation, or there wasn't then, about our responsibility towards it. Yeah. So I recognised that quite early too.
There wasn't a light bulb moment then. It's just something that's been with you forever.
Yeah, really. Definitely. And it was just what litter symbolised. So, like, it's what we talk about. It's the very symbol, or the very physical manifestation of a lack of care. Yeah.
So it must have been quite a strange journey to get where you got to. I remember going along to the school careers library, and there wasn't much about being an outdoor instructor. There was certainly less about being a campaigner for trash-free trails. How did that journey work? What did you do when you leave school, and how do you end up running trash-free trails?
It's a long story, that one.
Give us a short version.
One thing I turned myself, not with regard to litter, but I think with regard to behaving positively and responsibly as part of community, I think I class myself as poacher term gamekeeper.
Uh-huh.
I got into a lot of scrapes from my late teens and throughout my 20s, and essentially was quite lost, even though I was working in the outdoors. I didn't, what I recognised when I found this word, I realised I didn't have it. So when I found purpose, it was a wonderful moment. Mm. It's like, all right, and contribution. And also, I personally know the value of finding these emotions and what they can do for your life, because I was, without going into it, I was rudderless, So for me, and then through my work at Surfers Against Sewage, I found this pride in myself, this sense of purpose, this sense of place. And what I also started to realise is that taking action to tackle plastic pollution on beaches, especially at that time, was lighting this little spark in lots of people's eyes. And a lot of those people were people who could be classed as disconnected or disengaged.
Mm-hmm.
So disengaged kids, kids who weren't really doing so well in mainstream education, all the way up to men in particular, a man my age with mental health problems, who were recognised as coming to beach cleans on their own.
Yeah.
And we had this kind of, I realised that actually this simple act of positivity was extraordinarily powerful. So I think it was realising what it did for me and finding that I had an aptitude for using that same thing to light sparks in others.
So how does it become a job?
Yeah, I don't know really. Then I think there's a lot of luck involved. You know, like I did my degree in Cornwall, and just as I finished, the job came up at Surfers Against Sewage. Massive bit of luck. Mm-hmm. You know, got my job at Surfers Against Sewage at a time when everything was new. Like they'd gone through a big reset.
Yeah.
So you could find your own niche and you could expand it. So mine was the beach clean program and education program. Yeah. I was given that and grew it over the 10 years I was there. And then, like I say, it's lots of bits of luck, you know. And a realization too, when it comes to people who, you know, hopefully a lot of people who are listening to this will understand, is the only difference I can discern between an adventurer and a non-adventurer is the doing of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as well as the taking of the first steps.
Yeah.
You know, so again, that's how I did it really. It's like, right, I just, in 2017, I just started putting out my thoughts about Trash Free Trails on my Instagram account.
Yeah.
And people started to engage with it. And I realised that there was something in it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. That's interesting. Listeners might just need to know we're sat in a van.
Oh, yeah.
In the Sawbench car park at the start of what used to be known as the Marine Trail, the Gwydyfawr and Gwydyfach trails. Gwydyfawr and Gwydyfach trails in the Gwydyfawr Forest. So that's why you might hear bikes going past. I'm
perfect,
sure there's some cars.
Perfect backing
point,
music.
Yeah, it's exactly where we want to be. It's a great place. So. Okay, so Surfers Against Sewage, what did you actually do there?
Started off as a campaigns officer and finished as the head of community and engagement. So I was responsible for the beach clean program, education program, regional reps, volunteers program, and our community events. So essentially trying to that point of contact between the volunteer community and the campaigns.
So that must have been hard to leave there.
Yeah.
How did you make that decision and then set up Trash Free Trails, which is now a job?
A lot of my stuff is not, I can't remember a moment where I decided anything.
Yeah.
I just find myself in situations. So I think I can sense a certain compulsion. And I think Surfers Against Sewage, the transition across, for a few reasons. One, Surfers Against Sewage became and is very big now compared to when I was there. It changed as an organisation, and I wasn't comfortable as a desk-bound manager.
Yeah.
I started to, for me, connect. Go back to that word connection. I lost connection with the places and people that mm-hmm. we were representing, and it didn't work for me. But also, I realised that for 10 years until that point, I did about 2 hours extra work a day just whenever I was walking or riding or running because I was having ideas.
Yeah.
And what had happened is that 2 hours had been taken over by Trash Free Trails. So I was doing 2 hours less work a day for Surfers Against Sewage. And I just more and more felt compelled to work on Trash Free Trails. Yeah. And I thought, well, in end of 2019, there came a point at which both of them were being harmed quite significantly, as well as my mental health. Mm. I was like, I'm not doing a great job at SAS. Trash Free Trails can't go any further without me getting into it more.
Yeah.
And I'm so torn that I'm very unhappy, but I'm not proud of myself. Yeah. So I was like, it's all or nothing, and I just took the leap.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that a funded leap or unfunded leap?
Unfunded leap, yeah.
And so was one of the jobs to find some funding for Trash Free Trails?
Yeah, we had a fairly good, solid agreement with Trek Bikes, who'd given us £10,000 earlier that year, our first ever funders, and still our best funders to this day.
Yep.
So I was like, right, I think in the spring of next year we'll have this much. And that's pre-COVID.
Great,
I'd made all that call on pre-COVID.
Yeah.
So I was like, I think I can last 6 months. You know, like, okay, so let's just do things 6 months at a time.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And everything changed, but weirdly, not for the better, but in an incredible way for Trash Free Trails. So, yeah.
How?
Again, long story. I got stranded. because I decided to go feral. So I'd left my house in Cornwall.
Oh yeah.
And I was going to go feral for a year, just reacting to opportunities for Trash Free Trails.
Mm-hmm.
The first part of that was living in a cabin in Dovey Forest.
Great.
Which became completely unavailable because obviously little villages in North Wales weren't so welcoming to outsiders during lockdown. Yeah, so I got stranded at my friend's house in Mid Wales, which is the most incredible thing. And firstly, because they looked after me for 6 weeks, let me live in their house. Mm. Secondly, it's when I decided to get a dog. But most importantly, it was when I was walking their dog every day on the same route from my doorstep that I realised that we essentially a project called the Selfless Isolation Project kind of came to me. And it was all about, like I say, slowing down, finding your why, noticing things, observing things before you take action, which actually I realised was a big gap in the environmentalism movement. It was all about taking immediate action, tackle the thing that you're angry about.
It wasn't
as much about finding out why you'd want to.
So that's really interesting. Coming on to Trash Free Trails then, it's this is not just a group who go out litter picking, is it? This is a much bigger concept. You talked about nature connection, didn't you? What is that overall vision for Trash Free Trails as well.
Yeah, so then you're getting a little bit deeper into the kind of theory of change element, really. But for us, I go to the simple version of that is that if we were to distill the issue we're trying to tackle down to one word, it would be disconnection. So it would be disconnection with environment, disconnection with your role or a role in society, community, and arguably disconnection from self.
Yeah.
So if you are in a place like Snowdon, and you can have that amazing view, yet you can also leave your Costa cup there, there's something going on. There's some disconnect in that situation. So the great thing about that is that if that's in any way true, the solution must therefore be reconnection or connection.
So
we start with that point. Is that how can we use this work to create connections between people and place?
And that's what we try to do with mountain leaders. We try really hard to equip mountain leaders and mountaineering instructors with that, the skills and knowledge and understanding to inspire the people they're with about the place they're in. And I believe they have a responsibility to do that.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're trying to do that on a bigger scale, a wider scale. Yeah. Do you have a particular group of people in mind, or is it the general public? You know, who are you talking to?
Well, it's funny, we talked earlier when we were just catching up at the start about echo chambers and things, and that's really important to think about, is that it's not so much we disagree with preaching to the choir, but I do disagree with preaching to the choir just for the sake of getting the choir happy and excited, is that they're not converted unless they're converting other people outside their immediate sphere of interest. It's a bit like messages of outrage on Twitter about litter. Well, the only people who see that are also outraged.
Absolutely.
And the best possible outcome of that is that the people who've littered don't see it. If they do see it, they're going to hate you, and they're going to actively want to keep irritating you. So that's the first point. And the other one, but then more specifically, we have what we spoke about earlier, our Trash Mob Academy education program, which was born really naturally and organically out of a contact from a woman called Jo Shui, who is a teacher at an academy in a pupil referral unit academy in Wakefield.
Mm.
So she contacted me in 2020, actually the summer of lockdown, and she's like, I really like Trash for Trails. Can I use your logo? Because I'd like to do an education program with my kids about this, and this. And I was like, you can have way more than our logo. and that was kind of when, for us, this idea about quality of interaction before quantity of act came into really, like, solid form. So in other words, rather than trying to get 1,000 likes, 1,000 likes, we're trying to I'd prefer to have 5 super engaged, super connected people that might not have been beforehand. So we started with these 4 kids in Joe's class. And we worked with them over a period of 6 weeks, and we stayed in touch further than that, so much so that we ended up making a film with them. We recently just premiered the film ahead of the launch of the Trash Mob Academy as a national program that we just relaunched. But it's probably my proudest achievement, especially as a company director, because obviously I didn't achieve that. I wasn't working directly on it. But their SENCO, so the local special educational needs council, recognised the Trash Mob Academy after only one round as a recognised positive intervention for kids in this area. So the quote from Joe the teacher is, "We may not have changed the world, brackets yet, but we have changed their world."
Yeah.
And for me, that's all you can do. So you can have all these lofty aims, but really you can influence the people that you, you can connect with, but you've got to make the effort to connect with them.
Absolutely.
That's the big point.
That, well, there is a dog that keeps chipping in. He's gone quiet now, so don't worry about that. And we have got some rain as well, which is quite unusual. I know we're not used to it. What you're doing there is stepping out of that, punching out of the echo chamber, isn't it? And you're getting into to meet people, in particularly in urban settings, who might not have thought of this stuff, because it's, you know, people just are not aware that litter's a problem, are they? But rather than sitting here in this car park at the bottom of these mountain bikes just haranguing mountain bikers, you're actually getting in to a source, if you like, where people are coming from in the city, isn't there? So that video is available, I believe.
So again, that's on our YouTube channel. You can find it again through all of our channels and through our website, trashfreecharles.org. But also, you know, it's perfect timing, this, really, because we're right in the middle of our Trash Mob Academy education program. And like all of our work, it follows the DIO principle, which is which stands for do it ourselves. So the idea is that we don't want to become an umbrella organisation that you've got to register with, you know, and you've got to do everything exactly like we say it. So the idea is that we aim to create inspiration, information and tools that people can use in their own way with their own voices. And the education programme is perfect for that, because your listeners, Mantle Leaders, could use our open source Train the Trainer cards to learn, look at some of the ways that we approach connecting kids with nature when they're when they're using it, either for mountain biking or for running or for going to Go Ape, for example.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. That, so would the mountain leaders, mountaineering instructors, who I was listening, want to know more, they can go to watch that on YouTube, the Trash Mob Academy, because that's excellent. Yeah. And then if they visit your website, they'll find resources to help them run their own Trash Mob Academy.
I'll also be really propositional and say, this is a developing project, and we're always going to be developing, because I want to respond to opportunities. So off the back of this, right, Mike, I'm going to be saying, look, can we put a newsletter together to mountain leaders? Because we're actually, last week we did a Train the Trainer online with them. And even our program manager, Rich, spent some time in Thetford Forest last week working with the Forestry England and Go Ape instructors there.
Yeah.
So we'd be very interested in working with them, and maybe you know, meeting at a location and working with 15, 20 mountain leaders at some point. Yeah. Like, come to us with ideas.
Yeah, I can see a workshop coming up for mountain leaders next year. Trash Free Trails, Trash Mob Academy on the hill. And I think there'll be a lot of interest in that. I'm just going to... I just want to cut through to a few more chasers as well. Mm. I love all that inspirational stuff about aspiring about the environment and nature. That's where I'm at as well. But how big an issue is trash on trails? What's the problem there? And how are you quantifying that? Because, you know, I don't see that much rubbish when I'm out on the hill.
Firstly, that's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what an example that could set, if we can reduce it even further down to nothing.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Is I always want to challenge the way that we've been trained to think. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I don't see much out there. So in other words, what someone might be implying there is, what's the point in trying to clean it? It's like, well, no, what a great opportunity is that, like, we can actually clean it.
Absolutely.
And then we can set an example, and we can use these spaces as they're meant to be, as these oasis from the daily grind, do you know? And the flip side to that is, if we let this definite increasing amount of single-use pollution encroach upon our trails and wild places, there's nowhere we can go to escape the kind of taint of human carelessness. So that's one example. But the other one is that anyone who's been looking at it, observing it actively, like myself, over the last 15, 20 years, 10 years professionally, or 12 years professionally now, knows that it is increasing slightly. Mm-hmm. But the issue is that there's no science to back that up currently.
Yep.
And the reason I can say that is because I'm the person who's doing the first scientific study of it. Yep. And my way over word count lit review was evidence to the fact I couldn't find any evidence. To give a bit of a comparison, some comparative context to this, is that in 2021 there were 1,765 published articles on with the title of marine beach litter.
So you say that again? 1,700.
1,765 published papers that looked at marine beach litter in some way.
Gosh, that's
in 2021.
Great. And how many for mountain trails? Paths?
None, zero.
And mountain bike trails?
Zero.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's zero papers currently on. But the exciting thing is, in 2012 there were just 50 on marine beach litter.
Ah, right. Yeah.
So if you think about where we've come in the last decade.
Yeah.
Then, and also, so right now we're in the second year of the UN decade for ocean science.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I was there at SAS then. I've been there for 2 years. I'd been verbally attacked at beaches by people saying, "What are you doing here? Our beaches aren't dirty. What are you on about?" You know, and to now, you know, you go to those same beaches and they're having regular community beach cleans.
Gosh.
You know, so what a wonderful roadmap we've got to follow. For me it's about, and then the greatest thing too is, again, like, sure, your mountain leaders will know this, and is that every time they learn something new about the mountain environment, I want to ask whether you actively think about it or not, what happens to your feeling of your sense of belonging to that space?
Mm-hmm.
My argument is it increases incrementally each time.
Completely agree.
So the other thing, there's no better way to increase, you know, your knowledge of a place and your sense of belonging to a place than doing something to protect it.
Absolutely.
And by adding value to that, by when you take an action to protect it, to record it, and contribute that to pioneering science such as this, just adding layers of purpose.
So we need to care about the place, to look after the place.
But first, we need to learn how to care.
And we need, how do we care then?
We don't quite know yet, because that's the big. So that's the big gap, isn't it? It's always like, right, we just go straight from seeing litter to condemnation.
Yes.
So people should. They're scumbags. They're litterers. They're just this. They're just that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care. The blah blah. And it's like, all right, fair enough. Firstly, how much is that helping as an emotion, regardless of whether you're right or wrong to have it?
Yeah.
And my argument is, it's not helping at all.
Nope.
So our duty, my first duty, is to go, right, why is it happening? What's the cause of it? Yeah. And how do we address that cause?
Mm.
And like I say, you know, for me, it starts with symbolic places like Snowdon and, you know, symbolic moments like bank holiday, the hottest bank holiday, or the first hot week of the, can we do something then?
Yeah.
Because we know it's going to get smashed with litter.
Yeah.
Let's preempt it.
So do you think you can find out why people actually drop litter?
People are trying hard. I think it's a lot. You know, Keep Britain Tidy have got a whole bloody department. It's called the behavioural, department.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about social desirability and nudge theory, broken window syndrome, all this kind of stuff. But there's other stuff going on too. If you sit and ask you to do an experiment, if you put a chip wrapper or whatever into a bin that's quite well stuffed already, and then sit and watch that bin the rest of the day, I'm making stuff up now, so forgive me, this is unscientific, but it's not rare that you won't see a seagull come down and rip all that stuff out.
Absolutely.
So suddenly you've got stuff there that if the next person arrives and the seagull's gone, they're thinking that litterers have been
so the
other one is littering is a system of is a symptom of like a really complex set of interconnected things. Like, you know, people would class leaving their tied up bag, Sainsbury's bag, by the side of a full bin.
Yeah.
Some people get angry about that, but I'm like, actually, that's someone doing, they're honouring the social contract there.
Yeah.
Because they've put their litter by the bin.
Yeah. And the bin's full, isn't it? and that gets old.
So you condemn them for that, yeah, and they'd be like, "Oh, yeah, well, excuse my language, but yeah, oh, but like, oh, fuck you then, I won't even bother," you know. And yeah, it's like,
yeah.
So I think it's very, and again, the fact that it's complicated. Oh yeah, and the first thing to remember, the first thing to remember too, is that in talking about this and trying to find out different ways and trying not to condemn people, I'm not saying that it's not. I'm not hugely angry about that individual behaviour. Yeah, I'm not saying that the individual has the majority of the responsibility there.
Yeah.
But it isn't completely black and white. There's a shared responsibility across the spectrum there. It starts with them, but it also, I mean, arguably it starts with Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, with extended producer responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, they spend over £1 billion a year in advertising. How much do they spend? How much do they spend in influencing us to use and dispose of the product properly? I'll just ask people to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not something you see a lot of, is it?
200,000 bottles a second.
Is that what they're doing?
Yeah.
Plastic.
Yeah.
Wow. But surely they're using recycled plastic all the time.
Aha! Right? I love it. So, so now, 1980, Coca-Cola committed to using 30% recycled plastic in their bottles, or their bottles being made from 30% recycled plastic. 2020, they committed to... Oh, so by 1990. 2020, they committed to... using to making their bottles using 30% of recycled plastic.
The same number?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it hasn't changed?
No.
And they're producing more bottles?
Yeah.
So that's more waste.
So if you're to say there's nothing, they've got nothing to do with it, yet they are allowed to make these, they're allowed to lie.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do. They know that me and you know, I'm tired. And you probably don't last more than 10 years campaigning against
that's
them.
True, yeah.
So they just hold off 10 years, like, we'll go again now.
Wow. Amazing.
But then, so another reason that the science is important, I'm jumping around now, but I got excited, is that so there's no science right now on the causes, prevalence, as in how much is out there, like, kind of how much is out there and where it is, so distribution as well, composition, so what types of things are out there, and then off the back of that, impacts. Mm. One of the interesting things is that we have collected 1,000 data sets, citizen science data sets around the country now already. So we're now analysing that as part of the first paper. And some of our own kind of internal report gathering has found that Lucozade is the number one most prevalent branded item found in our trails.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Mm. Whereas every other study of its kind, streets, rivers, canals, beaches, Coca-Cola is by far and away, and that's because of market share, and Lucozade is normally about sixth. Yeah, and so energy products are much more up the list on our trails.
Red Bull cans,
Monster cans, SIS gels, you know.
And I mean, it's slightly difficult, isn't it? To what degree do those manufacturers have a responsibility? You've said Coca-Cola use 30% recycled plastic in their products. Some of those big names that we would leap on and say, I've seen so-and-so's cartons in the gutter, they are using biodegradable packaging now, aren't they? They've changed what they're doing. But I guess that's hardest to do when you're manufacturing a can or a bottle, isn't it?
Yeah, I think biodegradable stuff is a horrible rabbit hole not to go down in a podcast like this. Again, anyone who thinks it might be the solution, right now, look up the regulations and you'll discover there are no regulations, therefore you can say anything is bioplastic.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So that's a big problem. Yeah. And people exploit loopholes, as we well know.
Absolutely.
So there's that. And then the other argument there is bioplastic an excuse to litter?
Yeah.
Because some people are like, it's all right, it breaks down. Yeah. So there's that one. Yeah. And really, I think, is like I say, we're actually working with Bangor University on a new research project about shared responsibility. So in other words, trying to stop this polarization, your fault, our fault, no solution. It's like, all right, everyone can play a role in this.
And you are doing some science, aren't you?
Yeah.
What's the actual fieldwork science doing, to quantify the project?
So this the exciting part for me is that, so the science has morphed over the last couple of years, because obviously I had these lofty ambitions to start with. I was going to be able to demonstrate the impact single-use pollution was having on recreational trails, and reality's bitten nice and hard since then. And And what's developed into the is fallen back into my personal wheelhouse that I feel more comfortable with, is developing methodologies and building a network of people and organisations and expertise through which we can begin to understand these things. So I'm doing a literal trial run methodological development of the impacts of single-use pollution on flora and fauna in three forests in North Wales, one of them being where we're sat right now. And I've got these two plots out in the forest, hidden away quite well, I think, for now. And they've got 30 items of the most most found items of litter, trash that we find. Kind of equivalent to a fly camping situation. So anyone who's walked around Llanberis Lake recently, if you go over that little rock...
Oh, I think we've all seen it in somewhere.
People have seen the fly camping. Yeah. So it's sparked by that is like when you stumble across one of those that sometimes can be really out of the way. Yeah. So arguably these could, the majority of that would be plastic. Yeah. So that could be in situ for many years. So it's this opportunity to study them as kind of live science studies. Yeah, so I'm looking at that. And each month we go and we do a thing called random stratified sampling of the plot using a quadrat, and we take these images and we're looking at, essentially what we're looking at primarily is a few things. So the impact that the litter has really simply and physically on the flora coverage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is it impacting the plant coverage on the flora, forest floor? The other one is, are animals interacting with it?
Yep.
Are they being attracted to it for certain reasons? Like, and that's probably me getting my most excited, because we've now got scientifically recorded evidence of animals interacting with eating through single-use pollution.
We don't know what those animals are at the moment.
Not yet, no. Sadly, the camera trap hasn't quite worked yet.
Yeah, but it will do.
Yeah. So, you know, if you think about that in the future, if we have multiple sites around NRW sites in Wales with camera traps, with, you know, all these items of litter. And other things. So what we've got there is we've got a SIS gel that's been chewed through by something. We've got a crisp packet that's been completely ripped to shreds by something, which is, I've not really seen anything ripped quite like that before. We've got a Lucozade bottle that has had evidence of chewing on the rim and around the outside. Yeah. So this is the first time this has been recorded. So now we know little things like, all right, well, if you place an SIS gel down, we've got the beginnings of a pattern. Within 1 or 2 months, there's a 10% likelihood that an animal will interact with it and chew through it.
Presumably, any brand of gel would have the same effect.
You can realise I'm saying SAS a lot. Yeah. I tend to, that for me personally, as a one of our mini campaigning things, is the consequence of you being at the top of our branded items list is we'll talk about you as the top of that.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a, you know,
hopefully we can engage with those companies and they can.
Yeah. We've got a. Yeah, you know, Lucozade, I'm happy to talk about again, because I've always been, throughout my 12, 13 years of doing this work, consistently disappointed with them. Mm-hmm. They seem to do an old school complete silence approach, which is not, they only say things when someone of sufficient fame says something. Coca-Cola, again, they wheel out statements that I know to be ineffective or untrue. And third place, well, they're fourth now, but third place were Red Bull. And they've been totally different, which has been awesome. We posted about Red Bull can, just reposted someone, one of our volunteers, one of our followers posts in August 2020. and I reposted it and I kind of said, look, Red Bull, you pride yourselves on pushing the limits, on being different, on pioneering, so why not be pioneers on this? Why not do this differently? And someone responded to me straight away.
Oh, wow.
And we kept chatting with them, and we were like, look, we're not going to go straight into a partnership because we're really concerned about, you know, about the obvious downsides to that. Mm-hmm. But the conversations we had, and the conversations we had with our community as well, asking them, should we work with Red Bull, kept coming back positive.
Yeah.
Kept coming back. And it all, and for us, it eventually boiled down to Red Bull are the fourth most found branded item on our trails. Mm-hmm. Who's dropping the Red Bull? People who drink Red Bull. Mm-hmm. we need to speak to people who drink Red Bull.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not going to speak to people who drink Red Bull if we're making an enemy of Red Bull.
Makes
sense. So that was our thought process.
Yeah.
And then the guards we put in place were, Red Bull, you're not going to mute us. So if we find a Red Bull can, I found one yesterday. If you look on my Instagram now, today, you'll see there's a Red Bull can. Mm-hmm. If we find a Red Bull can with animal remains in, we will post about said animal, and we will put it in our report. We'll respond to a journalist who's interested in it.
Yeah.
And they actually said, good.
We won't. And how are they responding, Red Bull? What are they doing?
So a lot of the stuff so far is integrating us into their kind of comms and their events, which is massively important. So what's really exciting is tomorrow, so the 25th of October, Rich, our programs manager, is speaking at Red Bull Flight School, which is it's at Silverstone, I think it is, and it's where they bring in their cohort of field sampling teams from around the whole country. So the people you see giving you free samples at events everywhere, Rich is speaking to them all tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's embedding what we talked about, that kind of much like a mountain leader. Responsibility. I'm going to give you this can. We're in this cool place.
Yeah.
Could you help us look after this cool place?
That's right, yeah.
And for us, it sounds simple, but no one's doing that first point.
Yeah, well, that sounds really good. Really like the sound of that.
Yeah, and they're letting us do it. Although, again, in terms of being honest and open, we were hoping to give them, the plan was, and you know, if Red Bull, again, they might hear some of the stuff I'm saying, and if they don't like it, I feel confident that they can come and speak to me and we can have honest conversations. But I'm staying true to our commitment to our community, to our volunteers, that I'll always hold them to account, is that we were working with two people at Red Bull Flight School. They were really keen to do this. We were going to make it official in their actual mission, so that, you know, their contract, essentially.
Yeah.
They have to do an hour's litter pick at the end of each activation.
Yeah.
And we were also creating these clean trails kits for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they would. That's actually been vetoed currently by the head office.
Shame.
So it's a shame, but I'm still excited because I'm like, once they see the positivity. Because the other thing is that I think old school brand protection comes in sometimes.
Yeah.
And they don't realise that people have moved on. Like, people are savvy to greenwashing.
Yeah.
And if you're savvy to greenwashing, it probably means you're open to honesty.
Yeah. Yeah,
in this you know,
it sounds like you made some good progress.
Yeah,
that's a really.
And then we're at Red Bull Hardline.
Let me just come back to that science. So, what will the work you're doing in the woods, working in three different woods here?
Yeah,
you've got your quadrants out. You've got your litter out there. What will you achieve from that? What will that tell you at the end of the study period?
It'll give us a baseline.
Yeah,
I think so. We'll have a baseline of prevalence, so we'll have across you know up to I think 300 or 400 individual locations too, because that's their first one. So how much is out there, where it is.
Yeah,
then it'll give us a baseline of composition at a number of sites, probably up to about 20. Some consistent litter picks. So what kinds of things are out there, you know, what brands are they? And then we'll have this one where we'll go, all right, the looks to be some early evidence from preliminary data that, for example, when single-use pollution items with for products of high energy content are dropped, they attract animals, and that can have harmed animals.
So it's preliminary
data on that. And then the next one would be, it looks like, you know, if you drop fly camping, or if you drop this much litter in a certain area, it looks like it could be having a detrimental impact on the flora coverage in that area. And what we hope will happen, and it's already looks like happening, because we've got two students lined up to take this on, is it will be the beginning of a number of individually focused studies at Bang University. So, for example, one student PhD impacts on flora,
right? Yeah.
One student PhD animal interaction.
Yeah.
You know, and in 10 years' time, we'll have this.
We'll have the baseline data.
Yeah, and then I can go back to being Dom, director of Trashy Trails, and go, well, okay, well, now this intersection between the university study and NGO is that we need to focus on this area of work.
So you help improve litter is bad.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think it is, because at the moment, like,
we know it's bad. Yeah, we know it's wrong. Yeah, but so, we need the scientific evidence. Yeah. So.
The precautionary principle, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it states that.
You also mentioned citizen science. Is there a way people who are listening can get involved? Can
massively. Yeah.
Interact with Trash-Free Trails. Can they send you some information?
Yeah. So we've got, like I say, we've got. Well, the last time I looked, which is back in June, 1,027 data sets. So in other words, that's 1,027 times that an individual has submitted their own data.
And what's that data they're submitting?
So that is what we call report your trail clean data.
Okay.
So if you go out right now, if me and you go out outside, actually on the side of my van, if you ever look afterwards, I've got the data form on my van done, and you can do it like a whiteboard.
Yeah.
You go out, you do your trail clean, you come back, you follow the surveying process, which is really simple, like lay it all out in the different types, plastic bottles, cans, and then, like I say, then count how many you've got of each, count how far you travelled, and then you go on our website, report your trail clean, and you can fill out the form there. What I'm really excited to say is that as part of my master's, another output is going to be this a big overhaul of the State of Our Trails report to be much more of a citizen science education tool. So we're going to have a new platform.
Yeah.
We're going to go on there. The data is going to update live. So you can see your data as it goes in. You know where it's going. You can, if you're an educator, you can do an education module on how to survey litter, on how to do a mini monitoring site in your school grounds. It's called Trash Watch, by the way.
I think it's probably quite a few people already doing that.
Yep.
So if they, and they probably haven't got anywhere to report it to.
Yep.
So there's a Facebook group called Wild Campers Against Litter or Waste or something, and lots of people actually doing what you're describing. So if they can do that, can they feed in through the website?
100%. It's a big principle of ours as well. Is that I want to go back to, you know, I'm speaking to you, Mike, and like I'm speaking to someone who I look up to massively. You know, even just from not having met you today, but read your book and hearing how people speak about you, is I want to say that, and I also want to say to, there'll be mountain leaders in your listening right now that I'll be like, whoa, what a dude you are, you know? Like, I really want to make it massively clear that you don't need us, we need you.
Yeah, it sounds accessible as well.
That's the idea. It's like, our job is to prove that we're not wasting your time.
And we should just make this point clear, we're not just talking about mountain bike trails here, are we? We're talking about recreation trails, footpaths, bridleways.
Yes. So that's the recreation trail thing too is interesting to me, because I was like, right, okay. Another thing I need to do is I need to find. So you've got to get your terminology right, haven't you, when you're speaking in this scientific sense. What is my aim? What is the aim and objective of this master's? You know, is it to establish a baseline understanding of the causes, prevalence, composition, impacts of single-use pollution on recreational trails through citizen science. There's loads of terms there that you've got to define. And the one that I couldn't find a definition for was recreational trails.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, let's create our own.
Yeah.
So essentially they are, our Trash-Free Trails definition of them is anywhere that people go to find a sense of flow state or nature connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be, and then we've got a drop down of about 7 categories.
Okay.
So it could be waymarked trails, as in ordnance survey or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be park or similar. It could be a wild trail, so unofficial mountain bike trails. So really it's that definition of, you know, it could be a wild mountain summit.
Yeah.
But it's that feeling, and the reason that people are using it is one of the key definitions for us.
So I should leave these to the end, but I just want to pick them up now. So mountain leaders currently engage in purposeful adventure, using your terminology, because they attempt to inspire the people they lead about the place they're in.
Yeah.
And mountaineering instructors and hill and moorland leaders and lowland leaders and anybody taking people out into the countryside do that. There's an extra layer whereby they will litter pick. They do that naturally. Yeah. If they record that litter pick, they can send that into the Trash-Free Trails website. So we've got a real symbiotic relationship there, which is fantastic. Something I scribbled down earlier was working alone, and I can't remember why I scribbled that down. You know, you are quite a voice for this movement, aren't you? Is it a bit lonely sometimes? How do you keep it going?
I don't know. It's funny you ask me at the moment when I'm really tired after a long year and recovering from being ill, because I am a little bit emotional at the moment, you know.
Like, yeah.
It does get that way, and I think again, like, I think it's important to be honest about that. Is that you know, one big problem in our world, especially in, is burnout. Is burnout because, you know, lots of different reasons, guilt, you know, having to justify yourself quite a lot, which is weird.
Yeah.
You know,
you
don't get the same from a, you know, you don't see it. I don't need to say it anymore, really. But I think it's an interesting time of year to ask me that question, because I think normally I would bounce back way easier on it, you know. But I think the bottom line is just what an incredible opportunity I've got, you know, I've got as well. I'm sitting here talking to someone like yourself in the car park of a mountain bike trails at 43 years old without really an incredible education or anything, you know. What an opportunity these places have given us. So again, it always comes back to, and then the other thing is that it's really fun as well. Like, it's really satisfying, you know. And there's not many things cooler than, this morning on our Instagram, we give out these way markers, which I'll give you some actually if you want. So they got our logo and it just says help us keep them clean. Way markers, and we do little friendly guerrilla campaigning with them.
Right.
So we just stick them up on posts that have other ones.
Around,
yeah, there you go. Yeah. And for me, like, every time I see that pop up on a thing, you know, on we've got one on the summit of Ben Nevis that someone put up. We don't know who did it.
Right.
And every now and then someone Instagrams it and says, "Oh, I saw this. What a cool message."
Nice.
And it's just like, for me, that's what a buzz that is, you know. I suppose it comes back to contribution and purpose. Yes, I'm tired. Yes, it's hard work at times, but having been in a place in my life where I wasn't tired or stressed, but I was bored, and I felt like useless. You know, I wouldn't swap that for anything.
But if our friends out on the hills in the next couple of weeks can just send in one of those pictures to your Citizen Science, that'll keep you going, won't it?
Oh my
that'll
God, like, it's the biggest, it is the biggest buzz in the world, like, and never lose that. I suppose it's like maybe when you're a mountain leader and you see a kid that you spoke to from like inner city Birmingham,
it becomes
a mountain bike instructor or something. It's like,
so do that, folks, if you're listening. Just take a picture, send it in to Dom, fill in the form. It's all on the website. You can do that. We should just mention who's paying for all this as well, because you've got some... we've mentioned quite a few companies today, but you've got some cool companies involved, haven't you?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that, because I'm a bad habit for not giving,
Got to give them a shout.
Well, the cool thing about them is they don't push for that.
That's nice.
Which is always a good sign.
A good feather in there, Kat.
So always got to say thank you initially to Trek and Jez Loftus at Trek, because they were the first people to give us money, and Jez was the first person to say, look, these guys are a bit rough around the edges, but I like what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it. Can we give them some money? And they did. And without that, no one else would have followed.
Brilliant.
You know, but that's led us to now have this really cool, what we call an ecosystem of partners. So we kind of try and think it like an ecosystem. So does it make sense?
Yeah.
Is there unnecessary competition? You know, is there an organism in there that's just really weird? Like, yeah, I remember once I worked for an organisation and we were sponsored, Surfers Against Suicide, Warburton's Bread. And I was just like, what have they got to do with anything?
I don't know. It'd be like an oil company sponsoring a cycling organisation or something, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we won't talk about that.
Can't imagine that ever happening.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
And it's actually harmful to the story.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we're trying to tell a story. So we've got our strategic partners, who are the people that support us to such a degree that we class them as organisational partners.
Yeah.
And that's really nice to do too, because they have a...
Give us some names.
Yeah, here we go. So we've got Trek, Bosch e-bike systems, Red Bull UK, like I said, Komoot, who are that route planning and sharing.
Oh yeah.
Komoot and Bangor University. Oh, and the North Face and the European Outdoor Conservation Association.
Wow.
It's pretty cool, isn't it? Yeah.
We do need to draw to the end, and I'm going to go a little bit off piece here, Tom, because I've just spotted a badge on your... you've got a Blue Peter badge in your van.
Yes.
Have you been on Blue Peter?
Yeah, that's the environmental badge too. And that was our education program.
See, that'll interest everybody that you're on Blue Peter.
We're on Blue Peter. Yeah, that was amazing. That was, what was that? That was the summer of 2020, I think, as well, actually.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Stamped by Blue Peter.
Yes, Stamped by Blue Peter, the good era as well.
That's all we need to know.
Yeah, inspired by Blue Peter back in the day as well.
John, we've managed to witter on for nearly an hour, which is plenty for our listeners to listen to. And our listeners have got to go walking, and as well as inspiring people about the environments they're in, they've got to take some pictures of the litter they collect and fill in the form on the Trash Free Trails website. You'll be hearing more from me and Dom. You'll definitely be hearing a little bit through Instagram and Facebook, the usual social media things, and we'll definitely have a little look at doing some sort of workshop and some sort of get-together. We need to get you in front of people and get them inspired.
Well, thanks for your time, and thanks for the more time. But yeah, and like I say, anyone listening, you know, I say it again, anything you can do on behalf of our message is massively important and gratefully received. So yeah, see you out there.
Diolch yn fawr, Dom Ferris.
Diolch.